Welcome to the Leadership in Yoga podcast, hosted by me, Shauna Kroger. And on this podcast, I'll be bringing you interviews with exceptional leaders in the yoga world alongside trainings and tips so you can experience true breakthroughs and help others do the same. Leadership in yoga, ay, ay, ay. Today, the universe must have known that I was going to talk about business and entrepreneurship and about the journey and about staying cool through all the struggles and all my tips and tricks and insight that I have for you, because I was raring and ready to go. I had my hot ginger tea, which is now water because I drank all my tea, while I was waiting for a man named Dennis from the Riverside help chat to get back to me on why I couldn't connect my second camera because they updated the app and changed everything around. So, you know, that is kind of the way it goes. I am a one-woman show around here. I do everything myself. I produce everything myself, of course, unless I'm in studio with a guest. But if you are kind of in that same position of jack of all trades and you're saying, you know, I don't have a team, how am I supposed to do all these things for myself? That right there is something that we're definitely going to talk about today, because I think it's wonderful when you can scale and you can start to have a team. And I'm getting there. I definitely have my team in terms of retreat and other things. But with the podcast, you know, this is exactly why we have to narrow our focus, why we have to set our non-negotiables and things that we're going to follow through on. You know, we're going to message the man named Dennis from the support chat, and we're going to wait even though it takes 10 minutes and we lost all of our momentum. It doesn't matter. They're the things that are going to go out no matter what. And that's really what it takes. So you are listening to the Leadership and Yoga podcast today, thanks to almost a two-year entrepreneurship journey that I have had. Actually, it's a little bit over 2 years, but I will tell you that when I first started out, I did not know what I was doing. And I won't call it wasted, but I definitely spent a few months where I was kind of just like flailing around wildly with no idea exactly what I was doing, and just kind of like a fish out of water, you know, after quitting my law firm job. So I'm not going to get all into that story of actually quitting my job and things of that nature. I do have a lot of fun stories for you, but if you are curious about that particular journey, I have actually two past episodes that I will direct you to right now, which are, one of them is called My Story, I believe, and then the other one is called something regarded to, if you type in the search there in my podcast when you're in Spotify, you can search for quitting my job 1 year, like 1 year later, something of that nature. If you can't find it, send me a message. Maybe I'll link them in the show notes as well. But those are kind of where you're going to hear more of the origin story of my entrepreneurship. And today, what this is going to be, it's aimed at business tips for yoga teachers. So maybe you're not somebody who necessarily wants to go entirely full time into this, but you're saying, hey, I want to start to make moves in this direction. Or maybe you just kind of consider yourself what I like to call an entrepreneurship hopeful. And I have a very fond memory of that sort of phase of my life, because the dreaming about it is so much fun. But I'm really here today to take you from the dreaming to the action specifically. And what I've noticed is that on this podcast, y'all like the nitty gritty stuff, you know, you want the actionable stuff. You don't want the philosophy here, at least not for me. We want the stories of success, of failures, and really how to apply them. And I think that this episode comes at kind of a neat time for me, because number one, it is actually spring. And I think spring is such a symbolic era for all of our projects and for our lives in general. We speak a lot about this idea of spring, but it feels to me like I am in the springtime era for my business. I am seeing the buds. They are starting to open. It's still not entirely green and growing out of control like it is in the middle of summer heat, but it is definitely ramping up. And I have to say, it's a very magical time, and I'm trying to savor it as much as I can, even when I get to the impatient phase of kind of wanting to pull the, you know, I'm just getting so curious and wanting to pull the buds apart and like look inside and see what it is going to be. I don't know if you could hear that. That's still my man Dennis replying in the Riverside help chat. Hopefully that goes away. But yeah, this is for you. This episode is for you, even if you're not necessarily a yoga teacher, but especially if you're a yoga teacher, somebody with an interest in, you know, the wellness world. But especially if you're starting from zero or you feel like you're starting from zero, I want to share with you that when I started everything, I changed over my personal Instagram. I think I had 2,000 followers on it, which were really just from people that I had met in life and around. I don't really know. They were somewhat randos, right? It was not something that I had previously been working on growing. And with that, I just started to position myself. And looking back on it at this point, I'm at about seven, almost a little shy of 7,000, which is still nothing, right? In the big scheme of things compared to big creators, but you don't need all of that. And it actually drives me insane when I see super big creators talking about how to grow things, because number one, yes, your insight on how to go viral and how to grow your account is super valuable, but your insight on starting a podcast and things of that nature, your journey is just going to be entirely different. And so I really like to say that I have started kind of cultivating the ground from no prior sort of garden of any kinds. I don't know, that's kind of diverging a little bit. But, you know, I had when I started the podcast, there were about 17 downloads in the first month. 17. And now we're about 1,500 or so. It's definitely feeling a little less safe to share on the podcast, but at the same time, I feel more, even more pulled to do so, and even greater drive to continue to share authentically, even as the podcast grows. So I've been in the habit of sharing symbolic food-related stories. And this is something that's been going on since episode 5. In episode 5, I shared my all-time favorite food story. I have a lot of mishap food stories, but this one in particular is about how I burned a sweet potato. Well, the microwave malfunctioned and burned a sweet potato, and it evacuated my entire apartment building, my like entire, you know, hundreds of people apartment building. And then the firemen had to come up to my apartment and check it out. And I had the pole up too. I don't know if you know this, but I dance pole. I've talked about it before. So then I had all these, you know, firemen and all suited up standing around the pole. It was quite a chaotic, embarrassing moment. But that one's in episode 5. I think the episode is called Stage Fright, or Dealing with Stage Fright, if you want to go back and listen to that one. But last week I talked about eating a stranger's pasta. In this week's, drum roll please, food story of the week is called microwaved hard-boiled egg. This is just really essential, just to kick us off, and then I promise I will get serious here. Let me tell you this very symbolic story about the microwaved boiled egg. So you know when you hard-boil an egg, how many of you, and you can just do a little mental check here, do you eat your hard-boiled egg cold, or would you put it in the microwave to heat it up after it's been refrigerated? I don't know about you, but for me, I was like, I would never put a hard-boiled egg that's already cooked into the microwave. It just seems crazy to me. And so the other day when Simone got home from work, I asked him how his day was. And he said that his day was going well, but he had kind of a mishap at work in the office. And so I asked him what, and he said, well, I was microwaving my hard-boiled eggs. And I was like, you were what? And he's like, yeah, I was just microwaving my hard-boiled eggs. And then all of a sudden I heard this big, and they exploded and they just went absolutely everywhere. They got way too hot, I guess he said. And I just thought this was the funniest thing, because number one, he's kind of new in the office, and knowing Simone, he doesn't get embarrassed by anything, would never get embarrassed by this. Some of us might be mortified because I'm thinking like, okay, a hard-boiled egg already smells bad. Now it's exploded. It's just all over the office. I used to work in a HR support position, and I was like, oh man, this just sounds like a disaster. And the funniest thing about it to me is more than just the image of the hard-boiled egg exploding, it's the thought of microwaving it in the first place. And so it's going to be a little bit of a stretch here, but I'm going to tell you that in that same way, where to understand what was even going on in the story, I had to essentially set aside my belief of the fact that hard-boiled eggs shouldn't go in the microwave and see that, okay, in this case, they did. And why did they? And Simone and I laugh all the time about our cultural differences, our these silly things that we completely disagree on that are inconsequential, of course, at the end of the day. But I really think that making a shift to becoming an entrepreneur, especially if you are somebody like me who has spent your time building out your resume, doing the internships, checking all of the boxes, and in order to become an entrepreneur, you really have to throw out what you believe to be true about the world and about your capabilities. So this is just a really silly example of it, but that's exactly the kind of thing that you have to stop and you have to question. And the best way that you can start to question those things or even know what it is that you should be questioning is by surrounding yourself by people who have different narratives, who are living the entrepreneurship lifestyle, who are making this a full-time thing. So I'm glad you're here today, if those are things that are of interest to you. I want to get us now to the agenda, but before I do the agenda, I have two quick announcements for you that I promise are entirely riveting. So number one is that for the first time ever, the guided journal that I created with my best friend Katie, they're on sale. They're on sale starting right now through the end of April. And essentially what we have going on is a 30% off sale, and it's called the Imperfect Sale. So what we're doing is prioritizing, since it's Earth Week, there are a few journals that have very, very minor sort of scratches or maybe a little bit of a bent edge on the cover, and we're offering those ones up first for 30% off. And so I've already seen, just checked, and we have 9 journals that have found their way to a new home. So even if we run out of the ones that have a little bit of, like I said, a slight damage, that 30% discount still applies. We'll still give it to you. You'll just get a perfect journal instead of an imperfect one. So if you want to take advantage of this, this is the only sale that we are having on the journals until we get back to sort of Black Friday of the calendar, I guess you could say. So if you want the 30% off, it's now, or it's going to be gone until Black Friday. So I really recommend that, you know, if you are looking to add sort of that writing ritual, that journaling ritual to your morning, and you don't want to have a journal that feels like a bunch of work, because this is why we made the journal in the way that we did, is because I have tested out lots of them, and often they have things like goal tracking, and there's a lot that you have to do, and then inevitably your journal becomes like one more thing that you have to do and you have to push yourself to do because you know that it's good for you. And what we wanted to create, and what I dare say we did create with the ritual of writing journal, is a journal that really feels like a ritual. It feels like a magic moment in your morning where there's blank space, there's inspirational stories that we have written, shares about our own lives, and also an invite for you to reflect a little bit more deeply on your own life. So check that out. I'll leave the link for that, of course, in the show notes. And then the second thing that I have is that if you are enjoying the podcast, it would be an honor to me to have you in the Leadership and Yoga fam. And you can do that as well by clicking on the link in the show notes. I'll put it right in there. And in signing up here, and it's completely free, of course, right? You will get free access to a week-long training that I made called 6 a.m. Club. And so if you've been hanging around the show for a while, you know that I speak very highly of creating a magic morning and setting ourselves up, because our mornings set the tone for the rest of our day. and our days kind of inevitably form together to create our existence. So if you want to have access to that free week-long training, go ahead and join the Leadership and Yoga fam, link as well in the show notes. All right, it's time for the agenda. We're almost 15 minutes in here. Each one of these also has a story, by the way. So I've heard a lot of feedback that y'all really enjoy the stories and that it's something that helps you retain the message. So I've done my best to provide a story for each of these, but this is what we're going to go through. We're going to talk about going from inertia to invincibility, talking about not letting life sort you and deal you the same deck that you've been getting all along, especially if you want something different, getting comfortable with unease, making a name for yourself, learning how your creative mind works, going from just kicking projects out the door to polishing them and serving them on a silver platter, stopping making extra work for yourself and extra processes for yourself. That wasn't my best English moment, but you get the idea. We'll refine it once we get there. And then finally at the end, and this is what I'm really excited about, is that I'm going to share what has moved the needle most for me. And by moved the needle most, I mean what has made the biggest impact, what has ultimately increased my earnings. Because, you know, we're here because it's a labor of love, but we also got to eat. So I'm going to talk about what it is specifically that has really been sort of like make or break things that I've either started doing or stopped doing along my 2-year entrepreneurship journey. Let's go ahead and dive on in. So from inertia to invincibility. I think a lot of times we start out feeling invincible because we're thinking about, dreaming about becoming an entrepreneur, and then we start running with it and suddenly things get a little bit dark and things seem really hard. They seem really far away. And the best cure that I have found for this is there's many different ways to do it, but it's staying inspired by listening and hearing other people talk about how they did it. Early on, I used to listen to the podcast, How I Built This, and that was before I even knew what I wanted my business to be in. I, at that point, was not a yoga teacher. It was not top of mind, but hearing the stories of how people built things and what their process was like, especially if you know, like, and trust them and you trust that what they're telling you is really how the journey went for them, even better. And so I want to share a little exciting announcement that I'm super stoked about because this is absolutely the first time that this has happened to me. But I have been invited to attend an event in Hawaii and I'm leaving tomorrow. Very early, so right after I record this episode, I'm going to pack my bags and I'm going for 5 days, 4 nights to attend a retreat in exchange for covering it on my podcast. And it just happened so that they reached out to me. And if you would have told me that early on, maybe month one of starting the podcast, I just wonder how I would have reacted. I think part of me would have said, I can see that, but if you talk to me month 3 or 4 or 5, I think I would have been so doubtful because that was when the honeymoon phase had kind of worn off of the podcasting and I felt like it was such an uphill battle and such a kind of tip of the iceberg sort of feeling where I had really no idea what I was doing. But that is the kind of stuff that you start to see when the work pays off. And so imagine, and what I was thinking to myself is, imagine if I did this, I've been doing it too, probably more like a year and a half, seriously, in the podcasting, I've only been doing it a little over a year, but imagine what will happen in another 2 or in another 5. I've got 5 more years on this, totally. So we'll see what happens. But there we go, that's the first one. It's in the baby book moment for me. Gets to go on a influencer trip, but for podcasting. The other thing that has been really reassuring to me, and so if you are feeling kind of this like you are speaking into the abyss and nobody's paying attention and you're looking at other people that are doing the thing and you're saying, hey, I want to be doing the thing, but I just can't get through to people. I had that same experience. And a lot of the creators that I looked up to, some of them are now my friends, which is crazy. And I didn't expect that, but it ended up being the case. And also some creators that I used to quite literally get all of my inspiration from, I now see that we mutually influence each other. And it can be the subtlest things, but whenever I see them, I never get upset that people are copying, because really everything that exists is some form of reworking of what we've seen and reprocessing. But sometimes, and it's happened 5 or 6 times recently, and every time I notice it, I write it down, where I've seen these creators using things that I know were my ideas, or they were my way of doing it, or just the smallest hints of it. And maybe, you know, of course, there's a chance that it came from somewhere else, or it was an original thought or idea. But even so, those are green light moments for me, because that feels like, okay, I am on the right track. No matter how many people are listening, I guarantee that you are inspiring people who pretend not even to see you. Let that sink in, because especially in the beginning, people don't want you to know that they're interested. I don't know what it is. I guess it's maybe it's an ego thing. But I remember this, the very first time I realized that this was a reality that happened, it was when a friend of mine, Clara — I also have had her on the podcast a couple of times — but Clara and I were doing this meditation and yoga live event, and I was leading a short yoga flow, a couple of sun salutations in English and Spanish, and then she was doing also a bilingual meditation experience, and we did a live. We were expecting probably just like 3 people to be there. You know, I'm sure the attendee list was like 12 to 20 and people are hopping in and out. But what we did notice is that there were definitely accounts that were fake accounts on there that were there the whole time. And it just begs the question of, who is this person? And what Clara said to me, it struck me, it was so funny. She was like, yeah, I think those are people who wanted to be on, but they didn't want us to know that they were interested. They didn't want us to know that, basically, that they give a shit about what we're doing, because they're too cool for that. So I really encourage you that if you ever feel that way about somebody, you know, you feel like you really do admire, you really are interested in what they're doing, just tell them, just like the post, you know, just comment. Don't be the ghost that is too cool to engage, because nothing really inevitably becomes of that. Number 2 here, don't let life sort you. And when I say sort you, I mean like put you, like it's almost like it's a sorting machine and it's saying, okay, Shauna goes here, this person goes here, other person goes here. And don't let life essentially deal you the same deck that you've been getting all along. And the story from this one that I think is super symbolic and really interesting, really kind of struck me, is that I was talking to one of my students, and she's a newer student of mine, but she's doing incredible. I can tell that she's super dedicated. She's really getting it, and she's definitely leaning into the rocket practice in particular. And I told her, it's like, hey, you know, you're always in that far back spot in the corner, which is fine. You know, somebody has to be in the far back corner, but I would love to assist you more. And when you're all the way back there, I just inevitably don't get to you as much. So if you want to come up a little bit closer to the front of the class. And she's like, ooh, I don't know, because I'm always back there. But you know what? I'm going to do it. I'm going to break out of my usual spot. And so she said, like, next time I'm signing up, I'm going to be in the front. I'm going to roll with that. And then she came into the next class, and I asked her like where she was going, and she's like, oh, I'm going back to the corner, because I actually did sign up for the front row, but because the studio knows that I always like my specific spot and that I only am choosing another spot if that one is not available, they just went ahead and actually moved me back to the back of the class to my typical spot, because it was an act of being helpful, right? It's by no means an act of the studio holding her back. And I think that's where in life we sometimes get real accusatory and saying, oh, this person or this situation is holding me back. And it's like, no, actually it's not. What's happened is that you've updated in here. You've updated what's going on in your brain, but you haven't let that update to the external environment yet, or you haven't told people about the changes that are going on in there, or you haven't given it enough time to sink in. And so what life ends up doing is continues because of your habitual patterns. It continues to serve you more and more of that. So the way that you break from this cycle is by, number one, becoming aware of the fact that it's happening and aware of the fact that you want to be dealt a different hand. If you've been getting crappy cards your whole life and you're like, you know what? I don't want crappy cards anymore. I want better cards. I know that I can't just demand it, but I am open. I am willing to receive better cards. How am I going to go about it? What's my first step? And then you stand up for yourself and you share that. And you keep sharing it and you keep showing up as the person who wants to be sorted differently, who wants to be put in a different area. So if I don't want to be the Shauna that is shy and terrified of public speaking, or would have never received the opportunity to do the things that I'm doing now, if I would have continued to let life just sort me out of the way, you know, if I don't raise my hand to speak in the meeting, and I never speak in the meeting, unless you have a really incredible leader who kind of pulls it out of you or wants everybody to be involved and be participating, you might just get passed by. So think about that one. That's a really, really key one. And it's something that I think is a constant, constant self-reflection that we have to be doing. Number three, get comfortable with unease. So basically, get comfortable being uncomfortable. And I know you might be like, oh my gosh, if I have to hear one more time, somebody tell me that. But for real, this is why things like cold plunges, this is why things like doing and the way that we do in the Ashtanga practice and the rocket practice, we do the sun salutations at the beginning and they feel really hard. They feel like a pressure cooker. You can just feel yourself heating up. And that first bit of resistance to the discomfort of breaking a sweat, you know, that is the most difficult part. And then afterwards, if you felt before like sweating was an uncomfortable sensation, you just get comfortable with that thing that you previously thought was a source of your discomfort or your unease. When I was teaching a class earlier this week, I have a very specific example of a moment of unease. And every time that I'm teaching, and honestly, my whole experience teaching yoga has been for me a confrontation with what I determined to be ease versus unease, what I determined to be stressful versus relaxing, enjoyable versus unenjoyable, all of that. I will not lie to you and tell you that, yes, the first time I taught a yoga class, it was just, I was in ease. I was in my element. It was magic. There were rainbows. I knew that there was something there for me. I felt extremely drawn to it, but it also felt terrifying, which I've talked about and I'm going to spare you the details of, but I'm going to tell you that in this class, for the first time ever, which is interesting that I've made it this long without this happening, but I had somebody walk out mid-class without having told me, oh, I have to leave at a certain time, or I can only be here, you know, before, I'm going to leave before Shavasana. But this was somebody left about midway through class, said nothing, just smiled, thanked me and walked out. And so obviously in that moment, a couple of things can happen. I can think, oh my gosh, she hated it. Maybe she's just tired. You could let the internal battle of like, it's your fault. It's her fault. It's no one's fault. Get back, focus on your teaching. But I had that happen. In addition to that, I had another student who had on one hand, no fingers. And then I had students who it was their very first class that they have ever taken. And I also had students at the level who were handstanding, actively handstanding, which I always encourage people to be able to do handstands. But the stimulation and the flow of the class and even the words that I was using and the options that I was giving, right? Given the student that I had in class. And I want to be very clear here that I'm not saying that people with any sort of disability are a burden, because I will be the first person. I have scoliosis, I have back issues, right? I have always had asthma, and I've felt a lot of times like when I have to do the breathing in classes, I can't do it, you know, and I wonder if I distract the teacher, if I breathe earlier, things of that nature. And so inevitably we have all these different bodies, but sometimes the combination and the difference and the variety, instead of being sort of like 10% different or 50% different, it's like 99% different. And so when you're leading a group, you're taking all of that into account, and at the same time, still trying to relax into the process. And that is the ultimate challenge of not getting worked up if things go wrong, if you say the wrong thing, if your plans have to change last minute. Because the best thing about teaching yoga and what it will train you in is essentially that, is how to be present with the people that are in front of you to the best of your ability. And it is a practice as it is for the people who are practicing. Another source of discomfort can definitely be the feedback that we receive. So I think learning to take feedback and also to be coachable, which I talked about in the last solo episode I did. But you don't need to be taking feedback from just anybody. And I will stress this and I will stress it again, but you do not need to take feedback from randos on ClassPass, right? Because things like that, they're going to elicit a strong response bias. And so that really means that the only people that you're going to see on there are the people that absolutely loved it or the people that absolutely hated it and just felt so called either way to go through the effort and to give you that feedback. I think a lot of times we end up taking feedback as well from people who aren't where we want to go. They aren't our ideal client, and they also don't have what we want to have. And that is an unproductive way, of course, of taking feedback. You have to recognize that unless you are going about your day asking people proactively for feedback, and there are people that you respect their opinion and you want their opinion, you are only going to be receiving this sort of response bias. Number one example of response bias right now that we have going on with the podcast reviews, I just checked, it looks like on Spotify there are 77 reviews and they're all 5 stars. And I'm like, what? I guess I haven't pissed anyone off enough to go and leave a 1-star review, but it'll happen. And when it happens, celebrate that, because also having haters is a good sign. I swear to you, it is a good sign. It does not mean that you should go out actively seeking for haters, but just know that even though you fear them so much, you're like, oh, what if I post this? What if I say this? And I end up getting the haters, you know, the haters are coming. Even when the haters arrive, the haters are going to arrive inevitably at some point. The more you keep doing a particular thing and the more that your message and your movement grows. But do not fear the haters, please. I had the bright idea last night. Something clicked in my mind, and this is why I mentioned the ClassPass idea or example, the ClassPass example. I was laying there and I was winding down, getting ready to the point, you know, where I was about to put my phone away for the evening and start getting ready to sleep. And for some reason, I got the wild idea. And I was like, you know what? I've heard people talk about their reviews on ClassPass. And I just realized that I keep forgetting to check mine. I want to go and I want to check. I want to check my ClassPass reviews. And so there I am right before bed, as one should not do. And I go in there and I start to read the reviews. And some of them they're sweet. They're like, I love Shauna. Shauna's great. Love this class. Blah, blah, blah. And then there's ones that are like, love her personality, hated the sequence, which is funny, or hated her sequence, which is very funny because It's not my sequence even. It's the rocket sequence. So I am not the creator of the rocket sequence. But then I found this one that was really confusing to me because it had my name or like my name was misspelled. And it was saying all these things that I was like, was that really me? Like, I don't feel like that's in my style. Is that how people are perceiving me? And I went down this rabbit hole. And then I go back and I look at the time of the class. I'm like, this is another instructor. So there I was. I got all worked up, number one, by what people actually did say. Also by what people did say, but was intended for another class and not even about mine. And that is just the perfect example of what not to do. What not to do. There you go. I am by far not perfect. Do not do that, especially not before bed when you get yourself all wound up and start having an existential crisis about the way that people perceive you or don't perceive you. So I think the best way that you can kind of mitigate that sort of a situation is by proactively going out, seeking the feedback from the people that are your students that you do want to feel like they're in a supportive environment, like they're in an environment where they're pushed to grow, where they're enjoying your class and your presence and your teachings week after week. I've lost track of the numbers because I didn't intentionally go to number these in the first place, but our next little item here is make a name for yourself. This is a big one in the whole business world of yoga. And I wish I could tell you that it's all merit-based and that the amount of value that you put out, you will instantly receive that value back. I think it pays off in the long run. I don't know that I can tell you. I don't know if I can speak to long run yet in terms of just the years of my life and also the years of my entrepreneurship journey. But what I will tell you is that making a name for yourself is absolutely something that will start to benefit you and will open doors for you, will put you in environments where you can be the smallest fish in, what's that expression? The smallest fish in the ocean, in the pond, and you can really be around some things that you otherwise would never have been able to be around. When I say make a name for yourself, I mean very proactively taking the initiative to introduce yourself to people, to share your work with people, and to not be shy about it. And that doesn't mean that you're going to ask them for something, but it just means that you're there and you're saying hello. And I'm going to pull again on an example from Simone, from my husband, because he just blows my mind with this kind of stuff. And he told me after starting, I think it was day one of his new job, and he works for quite a large company. It's close to 30,000 employees. And he told me, I want to message the CEO. And I was like, what? You're going to do what? Like, please, like, I'm just picturing, you know, what could go wrong and all this different stuff. And then the minute that I had that reaction, I said, wait a second, no. You know, you have been getting yourself quite far in life, operating in the way that you do. It makes sense to me. Just make sure you don't ask him for anything. You know, just open and close the conversation. And he goes, yeah, that's what I was going to do, because I looked and I saw that he's on Teams and I can just open up his chat. And so there he goes. He opens up the chat with this CEO, which, by the way, not even his manager, his manager's managers have ever had a single conversation with this man. He's unreachable for most people, unless you dare to send a message on Teams. He's like, the status said busy, but I was like, I just want to introduce myself. You know, I'm originally from Venezuela. I'm an electrical engineer. I'm very excited to be working here. And then he hit send, you know, and after he sent that, sure enough, the CEO messages back and is like, thank you so much for this message. You know, it means a lot that you're excited to be here and we're excited to have you. There are big things coming for the company, blah, 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 all this other stuff. But how awesome is that Not that he's getting anything out of that right now, but everybody was mind blown that he, number one, took the initiative and the action to reach out to him in a moment when it made sense because he's new, but at the same time in a moment where you're just trying to be so careful and you don't want to step on toes and you don't want to do anything weird, and you know, what if he thought it was weird and what if he didn't respond? And none of that at the end of the day matters. As long as you're thinking through the decision, it makes sense, then go for it. Because why not, even if he didn't respond? But now the fact that he's responded means that anytime, and there are projects in Latin America and in Venezuela, if they need somebody to do something with those kind of projects, who's going to come to mind? Who's going to be top of mind as a Venezuelan engineer? Simone. So genius. And I wanted to use that example as how you can make a name for yourself when you're not afraid to introduce yourself and you don't have an ulterior sort of like sneaky motive for saying hello to people and for introducing yourself into that circle. And I would encourage you not to have an alternative motive, because there is going to be something that comes from that. You don't know what it is yet, but you don't need to know right now. It's all part of the joy in watching life unfold. But you've got to open the door for yourself. Nobody else is going to necessarily, you know, give you the privilege of just opening the door for you. Next up, learn how your creative mind works. This has been a really big one. When you decide that you are going to be an entrepreneur, when you decide that you are going to grow your business and you're going to do it, you know, you are going to be the one woman or the one man show, you've got to start to treat yourself like an artist, like a creative. Contemplative time and space is key. The more that you're able to relax and sit and contemplate rather than problem solve actively, where you're going kind of around in circles over and over trying to think something through, the more that's naturally going to bubble up and it's going to bring a bit more ease. But the catch to this is that obviously if you wait to the very, very last minute, sometimes you aren't able to relax enough to let that creativity come up. And what you end up doing is just forcing something out through your logic side and your logic nature. And those things do not land as well, at least in my experience. Creativity and art and all of that, I was just having a conversation about this with some friends. It is such a driving force. It's a driving force in why we go to work, what we work for, what we want to do, what we want to buy, who we want to be, because it's magical. If you think about what the creative process is, it's like you're conjuring something up, like a rabbit out of a hat, quite literally. And you can even think about what is iconic about something as big as a city. And so in Seattle, we have the Space Needle. If you don't know what the Space Needle is, you can look it up. But if you're from here, you know that anytime you go to any sort of touristy shop, the Space Needle is all over everything. It is an iconic symbol of our city. And at one point, it didn't even exist. It was just somebody's idea. It was in their imagination. And now it's reality. I mean, it's been reality since from before I was born. So I've never, you know, doubted or known the city of Seattle without it. But at one point, it was just open land. It wasn't there. And that's really how it is with our creative things that we're bringing about. And we do so much work to create what we're creating. So it's almost like we're doing ourselves a disservice if we skip that step, that contemplative step, that slowing down and seeing what will bubble up once we stop the thinking mind for a moment. More tangible thing that you can do related to creativity is saving things that inspire you. And I'm mostly talking about social media, but of course you could do this in any other medium. But you got to start to consume content like a creative director, like the brand manager of your own brand that you are. And I know that, I mean, even South Park has made an episode making fun of personal brand. So we know that it's gone to that point. But as you're shaping what you want to put out into the world, you can look at people that inspire you. And I'm going to list off right now, rapid fire, all of the people when I just did a quick little scroll through what I have saved. And I actually save on Instagram primarily this folder that's called Creativity. And it doesn't matter what it's about, if it's business related, if it's yoga related, if it's comedy, if it's just art, if it's cute, if it's any of those things, it's unique. If it sparks something in me, and you know when you pass by something that is actually good, because you scroll through a bunch of crap that's like mediocre, and then you find something and you're like, ooh, this really captivates me. Why? So start to save and look at all those things that really captivate you. And when I look at folks' work that has really inspired me in a creative sense, it would be, and if you don't understand any of these names, I'm sure sometimes the subtitles pick them up wrong, and you're curious about any of it, you can feel free also to reach out to me on Instagram, and I can send you their profile specifically. But it's Danny Schultz, Rachel Bell, Jose Rafael Guzman, Chelsea Kwai. I also like reggaeton artists like La Rosalia, of course. I've also pulled in inspo from what Bizarrap is doing. It's kind of weird to say that in English, Bizarrap. Isa Quiros, Plantiful Soul, the More Core Core page, and others. But that is kind of the top of the file sort of folks that over and over again, I see them turning out things that are across different industries. Like a lot of folks in music, I look at a lot of folks in comedy, but that they're creating something that really has that spark, that has that essence of what captivates me. So I would say, you know, drop the all white aesthetic or whatever you feel like you need to be doing, unless you're trying to work with a specific brand, in which case that makes sense. But I think a lot of times we get the sense that the market is oversaturated. And really, what's oversaturated is probably your brain from following all of the same exact kind of content within your industry only and not looking outside of it, especially when people notice that a particular aesthetic works really well. And you'll even notice it in cafes and things like that. I mean, a couple of years ago, I do not think we had this aesthetic of all white with plants. And now we have all white with plants. I mean, look at here, like I can't be bitching about all white with plants, because I've also got a grayish wall and a plant here behind me. But what if I could have anything behind me? I'd probably have something different, but alas, here we are. Go subscribe so I can keep growing, so I can get a different background. But the market is not oversaturated. Your mind is likely oversaturated, because at the end of the day, there is always room for the best of the best. Somebody's going to be at the top. Somebody's going to be going viral. Somebody's going to be catching fire and really just popping off. And that somebody very well could be you. So just keep that in mind. This one is also content related, and I love this one. I think this might be my favorite of all. When you are creating content, there is a stage. And when you are creating not just content, let me rephrase. When you are just creating offers and things that you want to share with the world, there is a stage where you are kicking it out the door and you don't even want to look at it afterwards. It's like everything you can do to sit down, to do the work, to post the thing, or to create the PDF for your new offer. And once it's done, you are completely burned out. You can't do it anymore. It gives you cringe to look at yourself. And for a while, you're just happy with the fact of like, yep, I did it. I'm done. Can't do anymore. That's it. That's okay. Because we get hung up on being perfect in the beginning. And we definitely don't want to get stuck in that perfectionism trap. But what I notice happening a lot these days is that as a society of content creators and people who are active, it seems like we've kind of broken past the cringe. We're starting to get okay with the cringe and just being seen and showing up and doing our best. But now we've got to get to the refinement phase. this is why I say polishing our offers and starting to serve them on a silver platter. And you could even picture yourself with a little glove, you know, a little white glove, because you don't even want to get a fingerprint on that offer or on that thing that you've produced, because it is just so flawless. It is so spotless. It's just, beautiful. You could kiss it, you know? That's where we want to get to eventually. That doesn't mean that you should spend all of your time on that one single thing. It's just building up to that. So once you get good at getting content and offers out the door, then it's looking back and saying, how can I make this next level? With the podcast, this is something that I absolutely experienced, because I made it a non-negotiable right off the bat. I said every single Friday, a podcast episode is gonna come out. I don't care if I'm up until midnight, which I have been often, more often than I would like to admit, editing last minute, things like that, fixing things. But once it was out there, I was like, yeah, it's there. Some weeks I wouldn't even promote the new podcast episode. Like, I wouldn't post one single story about it, which is crazy because I just didn't know, you know. And now I know that the first 48 or so hours of a podcast life are the most important. So how it does during that time frame is super important. I can't miss that, you know, I'm missing out on the opportunity. And I felt that way about sound and other things that I knew I could do better. And continually, what I've just been doing now is polishing a little bit more. It's like, let's get a new mic. Let's get a better light. Let's finally have a better camera. And you'll notice that the polishing takes more time, because then you got to sit and you got to wait for our buddy Dennis in the Riverside help chat to get back to you so you can connect your better camera. But now it's just another part of the quality of the product that I'm creating. And so that is your journey, is to not only get over the cringe and become the cringe master, but it's to actually listen to yourself, to go back, to look at it. You know, this happened to me as well when I started to post stories of myself talking. I could not bring myself to go back and watch the story of myself talking because it was so bad. But how would I ever learn how I actually want to speak, how I actually want to sound, if not by watching and refining and learning from what I have done? So you're really wasting an opportunity to learn from what you're done if you're not what you've done, if you're not going back through and taking your own critical but encouraging or growth-minded eye to what you have created. Okay, this is our last little theme here before I share what has moved the needle the most for me in my business. But this one is to stop making extra work and extra processes for yourself. Oh my gosh, the number of times that I've worked with people, and some of them have been helpful, but trying to get my things organized for me, and then inevitably I burn out because it's just way too much. And so what you've got to do here is cut the crap, figure out what you actually need to know when it's happening. So a form of a to-do list that is not just a scrap of paper, but something that you can slide around. You know what's kind of coming up on your radar, what your long-term, short-term projects are, something like that that's super easy to use. I use Notion, and Notion is free for like your first 100 things. So if you're going to have more than 100 items on your to-do list, that's a little scary. So hopefully it'll work for you for free. But you can have the app version as well, so that way when something comes up, you can write it down there and then really quickly later have it up on your computer when you're working. So getting organized with that, and also getting your ideas organized. I use something called an iOS. If you want to hear more about that, I have an episode on that as well. I'm like loading you up on episodes to binge here today, but you can check on that one. That's something that helps me have my thoughts together and remember why it is that I'm doing what I'm doing. Because you will be surprised the number of times I interview people and I ask them basic questions about their purpose because they've built something really great And I have no doubt that they do have an incredible purpose behind it and words of wisdom to share, but they aren't able to recall them in that moment because they haven't been sort of written down in a way that is clear and concise and easy to kind of pull out of your back pocket in a almost like an elevator pitch sort of scenario. So iOS has been super helpful. And aside from that, I think it just comes down to getting some momentum and some movement going and then adapting and adding processes when you need them. So not getting all bogged down by really sort of lofty ways of organizing things and things that you have to do. I would say that your time is much better spent, especially if you are somebody right now, let's say that you're at kind of where I was 2 years ago, where you're starting to get some ideas, you're not exactly sure how it's going to work out, or maybe you want to get some, you just want to start teaching some students, you want to start teaching some clients, you want to try out some of these ideas that you have. I would say start to meet more people. If you don't have your people yet who are like-minded, who are on a similar path to you, who are also pursuing this sort of entrepreneurship idea, find your people, do whatever it takes, and you can go to what I like to call like a studio tour as well. Take yourself around your city, try out different studios that you haven't been to, that you would probably not cross paths with naturally. Go to those places. And I actually know of now two teachers that have gotten hired by doing this. And I've actually also gotten hired. So I know three, including me, that we've gotten hired on at studios, not because we went there looking for work, but just because we've kind of been hanging around, take a class or two, make a good impression, whatever that means, because that's of course subjective, but something, you know, clicks between the two of you. Sometimes you get lucky, studio manager is there, whatever it may be. You maybe just start following them on Instagram, post a story, show that you were there. And then later on down the road, they think of you. And that's what we want, is we want more people thinking of you and having you be the go-to person, whether that's, oh, we need another teacher, or, oh, you know, I need a consultant on XYZ matter. That is where you can start to get that momentum and that movement when it's not there, but it will be there, I promise. Okay, here is what has moved the needle the most for me. I've got 4 or so ideas here for you. Number one, and this is the most intangible of all of them, so hang with me, but number one is making my mornings enjoyable. I cannot stress this enough. You really, really must set yourself up for success here. And by setting yourself up for success, I mean not just that you're going to write a to-do list of all the things that you're going to do during the day, but that you're waking yourself up, you're getting yourself into a mood, in a state that is an enjoyable state to be in, that you're looking forward to. And one of the things that I've been doing recently that I absolutely love, it's been super, super helpful in sort of creating this inspired state within me, is going on a walk. And as I go on the walk, I listen to a tape. They're actually literally called tapes because when they were created, they were on tapes like back in the day, right? A tape from Tony Robbins, and it's one specifically for walking. It's super random. But he goes through, and you could always do this on your own, but for me, I love it. I love it to be guided, and it helps me keep myself on track. But you start out walking and just breathing in a rapid manner to change your state. And then you go from that into a moment of gratitude where you're thinking about everything that you're grateful for. And then you go into visualizing what you want to create, what you want to build, everything from long term and in your day. And you just picture it being done. And then you finish it off with incantations, which are essentially like affirmations that you're repeating, but you're just saying, you know, everything I need is within me now, or something else motivational. And you're just going along saying that. And I literally say this out loud. I mean, you will see me like crazy just speaking this aloud out on the street in the morning. I know it's obscene and I'm a nerd for this kind of stuff, But whatever it takes, beforehand, it was much more that I would just do journaling, or I would just take a moment, even just a moment before you get on the phone. Please, for the love of God, please. Now that temptation has come back in my life because I have my Aura ring, not sponsored by Aura, but hey, Aura ring, if you're curious, let me know. I have the temptation again to check my sleep score. My freaking sleep score. It's like a competitive thing for me. I want to know how I did, how much deep sleep did my brain gift me. I understand that poll is there. Now I just have, it's like a non-negotiable. I would just never open up the Instagram app in the morning, first thing in bed. I just will not do that. But there was a time in my life, especially during college, when I would totally do that. And it just sets your day up for comparison and feeling like you get a big dopamine hit, and then you just crash immediately, and you're just kind of going through that crash and boom cycle your whole day rather than you kind of taking charge of it. So I'm going to stop ranting on that, but remember too that if you want to take control of your mornings, that you can join the Leadership and Yoga Fam. Click the link in the show notes and I'm going to send you automatically, you'll get an email with the link to that free 1 week training for 6 a.m. club. Next up on what has moved the needle most for me is setting one true north project that is absolutely a non-negotiable. If you do not know your true north, and you might say like, but Shauna, like I have so many, like I am a multi-passionate human. I can't have just one true north. And I would say that even within your one project, there are a lot of different focuses. So I'm not saying you can't do the other things, but what is the thing that you are going to do COC? You are going to do the thing no matter what. And for me, that became the podcast, and that created a lot of clarity around how I was doing other things like teaching. And I've actually dropped classes that were cutting into my work time and also my ability to just be a functioning human and speak the words that I want to speak when I want to speak the words. So hopefully we'll see an improvement on that, because I actually have dropped two classes. I was teaching seven at a month ago. So we'll see how that goes. But have your one true north and make sure that at the end of the day, you've done at least one thing that moves you in the direction of that. And if you have days when you haven't done that, that's okay. And be gentle with yourself. You know, if you're healing, focus on healing, but also know that having project, having purpose that awakens something deeper in you that's about more than just yourself is inevitably one of the most fulfilling experiences that we have as humans. The next one that I'll mention is that reaching out to everyone you can, which I've already kind of touched on in terms of networking, but reaching out to big fish has been something that has definitely moved the needle for me. And when I say big fish, I almost feel like this is just a really weird way to talk about humans, but I feel like it's the most clear. I'm specifically speaking to the people who have a lot more experience than you, a lot more platform than you, who are places that you otherwise could not go. When you reach out to people like that, you will get a lot of doors slammed in your face, you will get ghosted, but occasionally you will click with somebody and you will form a mutually beneficial relationship. Because remember, if you watch all of those nature shows, there are a lot of symbiotic relationships where a smaller animal is extremely beneficial to a bigger animal. And they live like that and they work like that. So those kind of relationships do exist. And that has been something for me that has opened up an extreme amount of growth in my business and also in the way that I'm being and the way that I am and the trust, I guess, and the confidence that I have in myself. The best thing that you can do when working with big fish or with the animal, and you're picturing yourself as the little smaller animal who's going to do something helpful, is to actually do something helpful. Don't be a fly. We don't want flies. You know, that's not helpful. Do something that's actually helpful, and under promise and over perform. It's a really key thing to take into consideration, is not saying that you're going to be able to do something that you're not able to do yet, you're not set up to do yet. And to also remember that any time that somebody gifts us, and I say gift very intentionally, their attention or their time or their teachings, it is absolutely a gift, because it is not something that we can expect. We cannot go around expecting things from people just because we feel that they should give us the time of the day, because we deserve it. So anytime somebody gives you an opportunity, it is a gift, and that's it. And you're thankful for it, and you tell the universe, yes, more of that. Keep it coming, baby. On to the green light list it goes. Very last thing that I will say here now on what has helped me move the needle is to work on refining your offering. And if you're not at the point that you have an offering, at least to refining what it is that you're sharing, what your message is that you have to share with the world, what you're going to post, work on refining it until you love it, until you're super proud of it. And I think here that we're told all the time to not take it personal if people don't like our things. And I think that can lead to a sort of detachment from our work, from our class that we're teaching, from our retreat that we're leading. And it's true, you know, other people's perception of what it is that you're creating is not always something that means that what you have to offer is good or bad, because it might be what's great for one person is terrible for another, and vice versa. But you are allowed, I think, and invited to fall in love with your offerings, to fall in love with the process of sharing it, and to get emotional in it, you know, enjoy the freaking process. I think when I've done the best, when I've sold the most, you know, to talk about sales, is not when I've looked up XYZ strategy on how to sell. It's when I've been super on, I've taught an amazing class, and I've put my offer out there. I've pushed to share and to invite people into my retreat. Or when I've posted on Instagram and I've just been so inspired and so excited as I was doing it that I knew, I'm like, ooh, this is gonna slap. Like, this is so good. I love this so much. Oftentimes we blame the algorithm, but look at your thing again and remember the algorithm is people. Do you first and foremost actually love your thing, or are you just butthurt because you spent a lot of time on it? Because I have been the butthurt person who spent a lot of time and felt entitled to eyes and to people giving me their attention, and it just doesn't work that way. So I lied, because I actually do have two other little things here that have really helped me move the needle. So I hope that you have just a few more minutes in. This one is close and also near and dear to my heart, which is to show up like the person who has their own business, to show up like the person who works with X type of clients, who has X amount of followers. And more often than not, as I have been in the position of asking myself, why isn't it that I, you know, why don't I have the numbers that I want? Or why is this thing not working out the way that I want it to be working out? And then I look at how I'm being and how I'm showing up in the world, and I ask myself, are you really 100% showing up as the person, you know, as the version of yourself that has these things? And sometimes the answer is no. And so I think what you can do day by day is just get a little bit closer to showing up as consistently as you can as the person who has what you want to have, who is where you want to be. And I know that's a little bit high in the sky sounding, but it's really comes down to you know, even if you want to use the kind of superficial example of followers, this is something that I see from creators that are far beyond in terms of development and than I am. Someone like Dani Schultz, for example, she shows up on her stories for her followers, for her community. It's not about her and just wanting to be on there. It's also like a sense of building that community, of showing the stability of like, look, I'm here, like I'm here for you. You can trust that you can lean on me as a source of inspiration because yeah, of course, like everyone, I take days off, but I'm not just going to randomly just burn myself out so much that you're never going to see me again. I hope that makes sense. I also really mean to take yourself seriously and don't let yourself down. I think a lot of times letting ourselves down or not is a choice, and we can feel it in the moment that it's there. It's like, oh, I just really want to blow this off right now. It's feeling like too much. And then you psych yourself out. It feels, you know, is it maybe unaligned? Maybe it's just hard. Maybe it's just hard and you have to continually make that choice. And it's just life testing you. How badly do you want it? I think that's something that Emmy said in a prior interview. And I love that so much. When we have those challenging moments, it's life testing us. How badly do we really want this thing that we're saying that we want? In terms of longevity, and longevity in the sense of being able to continue on this path, to be able to follow through with your entrepreneurship plans, with your business plans, with your idea to go and become a full-time yoga instructor, recognize that this is the fun part. The fun part is now. It's right now or it's never. Because you can think and you can sit there and you're going to think, oh, it's going to be fun when this happens, or once I get this result, it's going to be fun. And the truth of it is that unless you're having fun with the smallest of little wins, you're not going to have fun with the big wins. Trust me. This is the constant practice. This is the constant work that I keep coming back to. And to avoid using the live, laugh, love phrase of enjoy the journey, you can look at any other example. You can look at the example of dancing. You enjoy the dance, the fluidity, the movement, the part that you're in motion, not the end where you take off your dance shoes. Is that really the part of the dance that you enjoy? I don't think so. Same with a concert. The part of the concert that you enjoy is the portion when the music is playing. It's not the last note. The part of life in general, of building our business that we enjoy. I love to think about when I was little and how we will even play as kids. I would play with Littlest Pet Shops. And the best part for me was the setting of them up to arrange them all. Or I'd build blanket forts. That was one of my other big highlights from playing from when I was little. And the best part of the blanket fort was the building of the blanket fort. It wasn't, you know, afterwards, you just kind of sit in there. The fun part was the constructing of it. And as soon as you recognize that the fun part is the construction, then everything changes. So on that note, I hope that this episode has been a little spark of inspiration for you, a push towards finding and recognizing your power, and also your ability to look at with clear eyes what it is that you're really currently doing and what it is that you would like to be doing. Have some fun along the way, and thank you again for spending this time with me. We're going to do something different with the emoji that we always do at the end of solo episodes. And so now you can comment the emoji in the response if you're on Spotify. If you're not, you can comment it on my latest post on Instagram as well. But comment the emoji of the top hat So you can kind of search it there. It's like this little black hat. If you can't find it, send any hat, but it's this idea of a rabbit out of a hat conjuring something up. Have a wonderful rest of your day, and I'll catch you in the next episode. Ciao, ciao. If you enjoyed this episode of the Leadership and Yoga Podcast, please take a moment to drop me a rating and subscribe. Also, if you're able to share this podcast with the world, it is greatly appreciated. Thank you.